And we're holding Kof Yud Zayin Amud Beis by the second Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of when a woman says that her husband is dead, or when Edom came and say that her husband is dead. So the Mishnah says, Achasei meres mes v'achasei meres loy mes. Suppose that a man has two wives, and they all three had traveled to Medina Siyam, and then the two wives come back, the two tzoros come back and say that he's dead. Oh no, so one of them says he's dead and the other one says he's not. So Zushai Meres Mestina, say the one who says that their husband is dead is allowed to get married. The Tito Ksuba, so and she collects Ksuba, because we had a previous Mishnah where Beshamai and Basil argued about that point, and eventually Basil conceded to Beshamai that she can collect Ksuba. The one who says he's not dead cannot get remarried and cannot collect Ksuba. Now you would think, it seems, sounds inconsistent. How could it be? I mean, either the guy is dead or not. So either his wives are allowed to remarry or not. But since one of them is saying that he's not dead, this is called, as we had the other day, Shabia Nafsha Chaticha de Isura. In effect, she's declaring to us that she is an object of Isur, and therefore we have to follow that. Then she herself is saying that she's an Isur. Now, on the other hand, a previous Mishnah, Kof Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, said, ordinarily, we would accept a woman's edus that a man is dead, but not. We had a few exceptions, one of them being where the woman is the tzara of the other one, and this is the case. They're tzaras to each other. We're concerned that she may have it so badly in for her, because tzaras in general don't get along, that she may davka be lying in order to induce her tzara to get remarried, and then the husband's going to show up alive, and she's going to be suffering all the consequences that we learned back in 10th perek of Amasechta. So therefore, so in general, the rule is we don't believe the edus of a tzara, and so that's how it is over here. So you have the two wives, Rachel and Leah. So even though Rachel is saying he's dead, that's not enough for Leah to get remarried because it's her tzara, and Leah herself is saying he's not dead, and therefore she herself is declaring that she's also. And as we're going to say in the Gemara, that also Leah's testimony that he's not dead is not enough to bind Rachel and prevent her from getting married. So therefore, that's how it results. What about, continues the Mishnah, Achasei meres mes v'achasei meres neharag? What if they both agree he's dead, but one says he died naturally, and the other one says that he was killed? So the mayor says, well, they're contradicting each other. So therefore, neither of them would be able to get married, because neither one has a proper edus that her husband is dead. We'll see in the Gemara, does Reb Meir disagree in the first case of our Mishnah or not? We'll get to that in the Gemara. Anyway, that's Reb Meir. Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon Omrim, Hoyo Vazur Vazur Moedus She'en Kayim Yinosu. Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon say no. The fact is, they both do agree that he's dead. So that's reason enough. So each one, we don't have to rely on the other one's edus, because again, you can't rely on the edus of a tzara, but each one is saying for herself that my husband is dead. The fact that they're saying two different ways, one is saying that he died and one is saying that he was killed, that's not reason enough to prevent them from getting married. So the mayor takes the view, says Tosfos, if one of them says he died and the other one says he was killed, necessarily one of them has to be lying. For all we know, both of them are lying. So therefore, the mayor doesn't want them to get married, but Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, no, the fact is that they're both agreeing that he's dead, and that's good enough for us. Next, Eid Oymen Mes v'Eid Oymen Loy Mes. What happens if you have one aid, and here we're talking about kosher aidim, that so one aid says that he's dead, and another aid says that not. Ishai Meres Mes v'Ishai Meres Loy Mes, or one woman says that he's dead, and one woman says that he's not. Now, the previous Mishnah had talked about where one aid came and they gave her permission to remarry on that basis. And then the Gemara had explained that it doesn't matter whether that one aid is a kosher aid or whether it's a possible aid, for example, a woman. Either way, this is one of those cases where we believe aidim even when otherwise they would be possible. So if one aid comes and they gave her permission to remarry, then another aid comes. So then we said, Loy Teitze, and the Gemara explained, it meant that she doesn't lose the heter. Since she already has the heter, then we can go through with it. Tosfos still explains that it's still not something that she should get married l'chatchila. It's the b'dievet. If she gets married, we're not going to force them. We're not going to prevent her from getting married. And we're certainly not going to make her get divorced, because after all, she does have one aide on her side. Different other Rishonim learn differently, that maybe even l'chatchila she would be allowed to get married. The Rosh learns that maybe there's a Gemara elsewhere. The point is, there's a Gemara elsewhere in Ksubas, we'll get to in a couple of weeks, Be'ez Hashem, that discusses this point and says that it's that you shouldn't get married, because then it causes people to speak badly against you. So Tosfos learns that what it means is they're harmonizing the two Gemaras. They're allowed to get married when you have the aid, the heter, and then the other, and then the contrary aid, then you'd be allowed to, but l'chatchila you shouldn't. The Rosh learns that you could even l'chatchila. The Chachamim are just advising you that's not a good idea. And the Rambam learns that you'd be allowed to even l'chatchila. But that's when the first aid came, you had the heter, and now the second aid came. Now you're talking about, though, that the two aidim came back to back before the heter. So one aid comes and says that he's dead, and then before Beis Din had the chance to hear them out, the other aid comes and says that he's not dead. Or Ishai Meres Mes, Ishai Meres Loi Mes, or one woman says he's dead, and one woman says he's not. Hareza Loi Tinase, then she shouldn't get married. Then she shouldn't get married on the basis of it. Because after all, the second one came before the first, before she even got the heter on the base of the on the basis of the first one.
What do you mean she shouldn't get married? Because are they telling her mechayev ota?
So that's the thing. Unlike in the previous case, where, for example, Tosfos learns that she could get married b'dieved, but b'chatchila she shouldn't. So here it would be that we would even. Essentially, according to Tosfos, it comes out it would kind of be the same thing, that also she shouldn't. But if she did, then b'dieved maybe we'd allow her to be remarried. The Rambam, on the other hand, for example, says that no, lo tinase means that if she got married, we actually would force her to get divorced, because after all, there is a suffix over here. You have one against one, and there was no heter in between. He does say, based on the Gemara that we learned earlier on Daf Peches, that if she married one of the Edim themselves, and she herself says, it's body to me, it's definite to me that my husband is dead, because I know this aid, and I know he's somebody that I can trust, then we'll allow them to stay married. But otherwise, we said back there, maybe not, because in fact, the fact is, it is a suffix to the extent that they'd even be chayiv in an oshim toloi, maybe. So that's the difference. In other words, if the first aid came and they gave her, and then Beis Din gave her permission to remarry, and then another aid came, then fine. We said we don't take away the heter. But here, where they came back to back with the vasachas, then we don't say that. So the Gemara says, in the first case of the Mishnah, when we're saying that we had, again, a man has two wives, and one of them says. That their common husband is dead, and the other one says not. So we said the one that says that he's dead can remarry, the one that says he's not dead cannot. Now the Gemara says, "Taima de Omro by mess." So what's the implication? Seems to be only because the second one said that he's not dead. Ho ishtika tinase. The question is, and if she didn't say anything, then would she herself be allowed to remarry? Ha ein sara me'id l'chaverta. After all, we learned previously that a tzara can't give eidos on behalf of her tzara. So meaning, in other words, let's consider. You have the two wives, Rachel and Leah. Rachel comes and says that their husband is dead. Now, we're saying in our Mishnah that if Leah says he's not, then Leah is not allowed to be married. Now, what would happen if Leah didn't say anything? Would she be allowed to be married? No, because who's the one who's saying their husband is dead? Rachel. And Rachel is her tzara. And a tzara can't give eidos on behalf of her. So why is the Mishnah telling us only because Leah is saying he's not dead, therefore she can't be married, which would imply that if she hadn't said anything, she could. The fact is she can't get remarried based on this either way. The answer is, Loi mes itzrichalei. The answer is that's true, but the chiddush of the Mishnah is where she says that he's not dead, because Saukrad Chamina Hol Mais, without the Mishnah telling us, you would think that maybe in fact he really is dead. So why is she saying he's not dead? Because again, we're saying that tsaras don't get along. So maybe she's saying he's not dead in order to mess things up for her tsara, to keep her tsara as an aguna. And she figures Thomas Nafshin Plishtim Kamna, she's gonna figure like the way that the proverbial expression that Shimshin used when he brought down the house on the Plishtim, where he says, let me die with the Plishtim. In other words, sometimes you have a person is willing to do something out of spite to his enemies, even though it means that he's going to be harmed in the process as well. So therefore, Leia might be thinking to herself that if I dafka say that our husband is not dead, the result of it will be, okay, so it means that I'll be stuck. Fine, I can live with that. But the point is that Rachel will be stuck. Let me do that. So therefore, so you would think that maybe, in fact, it's not the case. Maybe he really is dead. The Thomas Nafshin Plishtim Ka'amra, so she's saying a Thomas Nafshin Plishtim type of thing, Kamash Malan, and therefore the Mishnah tells us that even so we don't believe her.
What's the Tamin?
Thomas Nafshin Plishtim means let me die with the Plishtim. It's an expression that Shimshin did, that Shimshin said when the Plishtim had blinded him and they had him in their temple over there to entertain them, and he pulled on the pillars and then knocked the whole building down and killed thousands of Plishtim in the process, but he himself was killed in that as well, in that building's collapse as well. But he said Thomas Nafshin Plishtim, so it became a proverb, like when a person does something that I want to harm the other person, and I don't care whether it also harms me. Maybe she herself should in fact be mutter to get married, because in other words, we should say, yes, she's saying that their husband is alive, but she doesn't really mean it. She knows good and well that he's dead, and she's just doing it in order to cause tsar to her tsara. So we would say that for her herself, at least, she should be allowed to be married, kamash malon. And therefore the Mishnah is telling us that no, the fact is she is saying that their husband is alive, And therefore that she can't get me married. Tosfos points out that what it means is even if afterwards she gives an amasla for what she says. Now we're going to learn in Ksubas in a few weeks, Bez Hashem, that there are cases where a woman says on herself that she's osur, but then she gives an amasla. For example, you have, let's say with kiddushin, you can have where a woman is being proposed a shidduch and she says, I can't, I'm already married. Later on, she gives us an amasla, she gives us an excuse. The reason I said I was married at the time is because this guy who was proposing a shidduch to me was a no good nick. I didn't want to get involved with him. And rather than telling him, I'm sorry, I don't like you, I figured let me just evade him by telling him I'm married. So that's such a thing. It's called an amasla and it's acceptable. So the point is, Tosfos says here, we wouldn't say that. Here, once she says our husband is alive, then we don't even accept an amasla afterwards. Even if she were to say, I only said that because I wanted to keep my tsara as an aguna, or whatever reason she says, nevertheless, we don't accept it. And we say, you said your husband is alive, therefore you can't get remarried until you actually have some kind of evidence that's acceptable, la halacha, that he's dead. Next, the Mishnah had said, achas emeres meschula. We said you have the case, again, where both of them agree he's dead, but one says that he died naturally, the other one says that he was killed. So the mayor says they're contradicting each other. We can't believe either one of them. Therefore, neither of them can get married. And Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon say, no, the fact is they both agree he's dead. Therefore, they could get remarried because each one is saying Eidos for herself. So the question is, why doesn't Rabbi Meir argue in the Reisha as well? In the case of the one says mess and one says loy mess. So we're saying there that the Mishnah had said that the one who says that he died can marry, but the one who says loy mes cannot. According to the mayor, following the same logic, the mayor should say that since they're contradicting each other, we can't believe either one of them, so neither one can be married. Why is the mayor not arguing there? So the Balazar says, yeah, as a matter of fact, you should know the same machlokas applies in the first case. So it's not the beginning of the Mishnah is not according to everybody. It's according to Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. And then they continue. Then Rabbi Meir gives his opinion. And then Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon go back to explaining their opinion. Rabbi Yochanan says, not necessarily. You could even say that the beginning of the Mishnah is like Rabbi Meir, because in the first case where one says he's dead and one says he's not, even Rabbi Meir might agree, when one of them says he's not dead, when it comes to Eidos Isha, then it's not considered a hakasha, because we said before that the Chachamim allow us to believe the first one, and we said that even though she's only one woman, she has the force of what she says has the force of Eidos. So therefore, so when the first one comes and says mess, even though the second one, that Sara, comes and says loy mess, Reb Meir might hold that then that's that we, it's good enough for us to follow the first one. Fine, not as far as the Tzara, because the Tzara can't give Eidos on behalf of the Tzara, but at least for herself, that she should be allowed to be married. So the mayor would say it's one thing when they're both saying he's dead, but one they're talking about different kinds of death, different methods of death, then we would consider that hakasha. But when one of them says loy mes, then Reb Meir says no. The fact is the Chachamim allow us to believe someone who says on a man that mes, and therefore another one coming and saying loy mes doesn't contradict that. So Tosfos points out that would mean that now specifically by Tzoris, then we're saying that rule would apply, that even if they come to Vasachas and one says he died and within Toch Kedidibra, the other one says he's not dead. Nevertheless, according to this understanding of Reb Meir would still say that we believe the first one. But in a regular case where you have one aid and then another one, we just said in the Mishnah before, Ishoi Meres Mes, Ishoi Meres Loi Mes, Harez Loi Tinose, and that would be talking about Eidim who are not, they're talking about women, so it's possible it's Psula Eidos, but not Tzoris, because the Tzoris, there would be a different rule, according to the mayor. So with Tzoris, the mayor would say, once the first one says mess, then we don't care about anything else that the second one says, unless she says Neharag, where then he says you have a Chasha, but if she says Loi Mess, we don't believe her. But in the case of regular Eidim, or regular women who come and say Mess, and then Loi Mess, then our Mishnah had said that if they were Vasachas, then we would say that L'Chila, she shouldn't get married, and only as we learned earlier, that if she marries one of the Eidim and says herself body, then she'd be allowed to. Okay, but the point is, Rabbi Yechanan is saying only the second part of our Mishnah is according to them, is specifically Yahav Machlokes, Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. The first part about where one says mess and the other one says loy mess, even Rabbi Meir might agree with that. So the Gemara says Tanan. Well, let's look at our Mishnah. Eid oimim mess ve'eid oimim loy mess. We said in the third part of the Mishnah that if one eid says he's dead and the other one says not, or Ishai Meres Mes, Ishai Meres Loi Mes, or one woman says he's dead and the other one not, Harezo Loi Tinasid, and she shouldn't get married. So Bishlema, Rabbi Elazar, stomach Rabbi Meir. So according to Rabbi Elazar, who says that the first part of the Mishnah is not according to Rabbi Meir, so because Rabbi Meir would always say that we don't, Rabbi Meir would always say that the two Tzoris, we have to pay attention to what they're both saying, and therefore that Rabbi Meir would say if one says he's dead and the other one says that not, then we wouldn't allow them to get married. Okay, so then the Reisha is not like Reb Meir, because it's saying that the one who said he's dead could get married, and the Sefer would be like Reb Meir, that Reb Meir would say they shouldn't get married. El Reb Yochanan Kasha, but according to Reb Yochanan, wouldn't it be a Kasha, because Reb Yochanan is saying that both Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon would all agree that with the Tzoris, if one says mess and one says loy mess, we believe only the first one, not the second one. So why at the end of the Mishnah, when it says Ishoi Meres Mess, Ishoi Meres Loy Mess, on the face of it, Ishoi includes even Tzoris. So then, how would Rabbi Yechanan understand that? It doesn't seem to fit according to either of the opinions in the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, okay, Kasha, fine, according to him, it would be a Kasha. Now, as usual in the Gemara, Kasha doesn't mean that kasha doesn't mean a tiyuvda, it doesn't mean we've slugged up Rabbi Yechanan. It just means that the wording of the Mishnah is harder to understand according to him. But we could in fact explain it. So that's what Tosfos is explaining, that the entire Mishnah and everything that we've been talking about is talking about where they were bavasachs. So therefore, that's why the Gemara is bothered by in the Reisha, we're saying that they were allowed to get married, and we're talking they came with Asachas at the same time. One says mess, and within Tosh Kedidibra, the other one says loy mess, and here at the end of the Mishnah, we're saying that they're not allowed to get married. But so the Gemara leaves it as a Kasha, because after it's not a Tiyuvda, because for one thing, after all, we could say that part of the Mishnah is talking about Asachas, and part is talking Bazeh HaZeh, or you could say, as we said, that Soros are different. There's always ways to end for Rabbi Yechanan. All right, the Mishnah continues. So now a woman and her husband went overseas. So if she comes back and says, my husband is dead. So we said, as we said in the first Mishnayos of this Perek, that she can get married and she can collect uksuba. She can get married because we said the Chachamim believe her on the grounds of Isha Daiko Mitzvah, that she will be very careful not to remarry unless she knows for sure her husband is dead, because she doesn't want to mess things up badly for herself. And we said she gets uksuba. That was the machlokas, Bishamai Basilo, where Basilo ended up conceding to Bishamai and saying that she can even collect uksuba.
That was in our previous Mishnah.
That was in an earlier Mishnah, when there's now several Mishnahs back. Yeah, it was at the top of Kofi Zion and Aleph. Yeah. Now, but the twist is, but Sarasa Asura, but her Tsara remains also for the reason that we said before, because a Tsara can't give Eidos on another one. So before the scenario was, in other words, that the man was married to both Rachel and Leah, and all three of them went to Dinasayam, and Rachel comes back and says he's dead, and Leah says he's not. So then we said Rachel can remarry and Leah cannot. Here we're talking about where only the husband and Rachel went overseas and Leah stayed back home. So now when Rachel comes and says he's dead, same idea, Rachel can get remarried. Leah doesn't know one way or the other, but nevertheless, Rachel's Eidos is not good enough to be matu Leah, because it's Tzarek, that Tzarek's Eidos we can't accept. So therefore Leah is
stuck unmarried.
Well, she'd have to wait until eventually if new evidence comes that their husband is dead, then Leah will be allowed to be married as well. Yeah. Now, so when we say, so what the Mishnah is going to focus on is when we say that Tzara is Osir, in other words, that we're saying, in effect, that as far as Tzara is concerned, she's still married, her husband is still alive, we extend that even to the point that Hoysa Basi Surah Lakoyan, Tercho B'Truma, Divrei Reb Tarfon. So Reb Tarfon extends that, even what if Leah was a Basi Surah and the husband's a Koyan? Now we've learned earlier in the Masechta that when the Kohen, the husband, dies, if they don't have children, then the Bas Yisrael has to stop eating Truma. But here, Reb Tarfon says, the fact that we don't believe Rachel at all means, as far as we're concerned, Leah is still just as married to their husband as he was before. Therefore, she can actually still eat Truma. We would completely discount what Rachel is saying as far as it pertains to Leah.
Whereas Rachel can't take Truma.
So Rachel, obviously, if she's a Basi Yisrael, would not be able to, because she's saying her husband is dead. But Leah could. Tosafos actually discusses maybe it wouldn't apply to Truma Daraisa. On the one hand, maybe it would apply to Truma Daraisa as well. Maybe we'd say, look, she has a chazaka of being a married woman. Chazaka is a powerful thing, and that allows her to continue eating the same kind of Truma as she was before. Or on the other hand, Tosafos says maybe it would apply only to Truma Derabanan. Maybe Truma Derabanan, so she'd have to stop eating at this point because of the suffix, going to Reb Tarfon, but Truma Derabanan. Anyway, that's Reb Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva says no. Ein zu derech metziata midei avera. That's not going to get her out of a potential avera, because fine, you're saying she can't get remarried, she can't be over on the potential serious issue of an Eishes Ish. But after all, you're allowing her to eat Truma. And what if her husband really is dead? What if her tzara is not lying? Then you're causing her, you're allowing her to inadvertently do an Avera. She's a Zora, she's eating Truma. A Zora is not allowed to eat Truma. So Rabbi Akiva says, then in fact, she's going to be in limbo. She can't get married because she doesn't have evidence that her husband is dead, but she can't eat Truma either, in case, after all, her tzara is telling the truth and her husband is dead.
In case.
Just in case, yeah.
Okay.
Continues the Gemara, continues the Mishnah with another case. Omra mesli baili v'achakach meschomi. What about a similar case? Now, we also learned on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin in the Mishnah that there are five women who cannot... We do not accept their eidos on behalf of a woman that her husband is dead. Besides, for till now, we've been talking about a tzara, but we said another one is also a mother-in-law. So the same thing. What if Omra Mesli Baili Bachakas Meschomi? So now we said that if a mother-in-law can't give eidos on behalf of a daughter-in-law that the daughter-in-law's husband, the son, is dead, then it's also reciprocal. We said the daughter-in-law can't give eidos on behalf of the mother-in-law that her husband, that the father-in-law, is dead either. To use the scenario that I was using yesterday. So if let's say you have your chevid, whose daughter-in-law is Tzipora, Moshe's wife. So Yecheved can't give Eidos that Moshe is dead to allow Tzipora to be married, and vice versa, Tzipora can't give Eidos that Amram is dead to allow Yecheved to be married. So we said because they dislike each other. We said according to the Chachamim, once one of them dislikes the other, then automatically that's going to be reciprocal, and Rabbi Yehuda found a different reason why she'd have it in for her. Whatever the case, they both agree with the basic thing. So now Tzipora comes and says, my husband died, and then my father-in-law Amram died. Now you could argue, once she says my husband's dead, then she's no longer this other, she's no longer Yecheved's daughter-in-law. Maybe now we should accept her edus on her mother-in-law, on her father-in-law being dead. So Tzipora herself can marry and then remarry and get her ksuba. But her mother-in-law Yecheved remains aser because a daughter-in-law can't give edus for her mother-in-law. So even though she said that my husband died, nevertheless we can believe her about her own husband, but not about her mother-in-law's husband, for the reason that we discussed in the Gemara at the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, because she's thinking to herself, she wants to mess up her mother-in-law. And after all, she's previously had troubles with her mother-in-law. So even now, she's still trying to do things to mess her up. But again, continues the Mishnah, that Reb Tarfon says we discount what the daughter-in-law says to the extent that if the mother-in-law is a Bas Koyan married to Yisrael, so if Yecheved in our scenario is a Bas Yisrael and her husband Amram is a Koyan, still we would say she's still allowed to continue eating Truma. We would not say, according to Reb Tarfon, that there's any suffix whether Amram is dead. We would say no, it's a Vade that Amram's still alive, and therefore Yecheved can still eat Truma. But again, Rabbi Akiva Oyma Enzu Derech Metzia Midei Aveira. Again, Rabbi Akiva says that's not going to take her out of an Aveira. There's still the potential that she's eating Truma when she's not supposed to. Adjutei Asurli Nasib Asurim Lecha B'Truma. It has to be both, that she's also to get married until we have other evidence that Amram is dead, but she also can't eat Truma in case, in fact, Amram is dead and now she lost her ability to eat Truma. So we have the same machloikas in the two halves of the Mishnah, one in the case of two tsaris that are married to one husband, and one in the case of a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law. So the Gemara says, utzricha. Now, why do we need both machloikas in? So we need them. The e itmar hachta maisa, if we only had the first machloikas about the two tsaris, you would say, bahaka amr Reb Tarfon, you know why Reb Tarfon is saying that we completely discount what the first wife says, mishum tzayra de gufa. Because let's consider, what's the friction, what causes the friction between two tsaris is because it's a tsar of the guf. Because the man has two wives, therefore each one is getting him for tashmish only half as often. We're going to learn in Masechta Ksubas that there's an oina, that are different kinds of people, depending on their occupation and whatever, have different regularly scheduled oinas. But then we divide that by the number of wives. So, for example, you have, let's say, it describes over there, a Talmid Chacham's oina is expected to be once every Friday night, once a week, Friday night. But if he has two wives, then each one gets him only once every other Friday night. So therefore, so each one has a tsar of that kind. So we could well say that she's lying in order to answer her tzara for the future to their common husband. You're going to say what Rashi adds. What if she herself gets married as well? Still, it might be one of those Thomas Napshi and Plishkin things that we said before. I don't mind harming myself as long as I get to harm her as well. So maybe only then Reb Tarfon would say that we completely discount what she says. But when it comes to the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law, that's Sira Mili Da'alma. After all, the tsar that she's been having is only because of words that the mother-in-law tends to badmouth her to her husband. So there's no tsar aguf involved. Ema moidile le Reb Akiva. Maybe Reb Tarfon would agree with Reb Akiva in that case that we still have to pay some attention to what Tzipora is saying and be machmer on Yecheved and say maybe after all her husband is dead and she can't eat truma. And the Itmar Baha, and conversely, if we only have the second machlokas, Baha Ka'am Reb Akiva, we would say only in that case, again, because it's only a matter of words between the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, that Reb Akiva would say we have to be machmer. Ava Bahach Eim Amodilei Reb Tarfon, but in the first case, maybe he would agree with Reb Tarfon. Tzvicha, so therefore we need both machlokas. So the Gemara says, Amar Reb Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Halacha K'Reb Tarfon. The Halacha is like Reb Tarfon, so therefore, yes, we completely discount what the woman says, and therefore the other one is not only fully married as far as that she can't get remarried without evidence. And in fact, Achronim talk about, I think the Orach HaNer talks about that conceivably, even it would mean that if she accepted Kiddushin from somebody else, that there wouldn't even be a suffix whether those Kiddushin are chal, because after all, we consider her to be fully an Eish HaSesh, she's off limits as far as Kiddushin. But anyway, then Reb Tarfon would allow her even to continue eating Truma. So the Halacha is like that, not like Reb Akiva. So Amar Abaye, Afana Nami Tanena. So Abaye says, you know what? You can prove that from the following Mishnah. Oh, two Mishnayos further, the last Mishnah of our Perek at the bottom of Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis. The Mishnah says, Kuf Yud Ches Amud Beis, rather. The Mishnah says, Nitan li bein bimdina sayam, if the woman comes back from overseas, so now when she left, so when she and her husband left town, she did not have any children. As far as we knew at that point, if her husband dies, she's going to be subject to Yibum or Chalitza. She comes and says, Nitan li bein b'mdines hayam. She says, I had a son in b'mdines hayam, mes b'ni v'achakach b'ayli. And she says, my son died and then my husband died. So in other words, now she's saying, she's still sticking to her original chazaka. Because what would happen before, under the circumstances as it was before she left, she would have, if her husband had died at that point, she would have been chayiv in yibum or chalitza, because she had no children. Now what happens is she's saying, at one point we had a child, and therefore at that point, if my husband had died, I would have been exempt from chalitza and yibum. But now that child died, and then my husband died, so she's back to square one. So nevertheless, the Mishnah says, we believe her, and therefore she needs to do yibum. So she needs to do yibum or chalitza, and she's even allowed to do yibum. We don't say there's a suffix that maybe it's the other way around. What? Yeah, that maybe the son's alive, or maybe that the son died after the husband. On the other hand, if she says b'ayli v'achakach b'ni, but if she says my husband died and then my son died, meaning that she's changing her status, she's saying beforehand when I left, I was in a chazaka that I would have needed yibum or chalitza. Now I'm telling you that my status has changed and I'm not.
So she changed her mind this time?
It's not she changed her mind. She's saying it's a different case where she comes back and said, she says, when we left, we had no children. Then while we were in Medinas Hayam, we had a child. Then my husband died. Then my child died. Now, the fact
is,
in that case, she'd be potter from chalitza. If that was correct, if that was true, she'd be potter from chalitza and yibum. Oh. And as usual, throughout the Masechta, if you're potter from yibum, you can't do yibum just to be on the safe side, because it would be an error. Right. So therefore, it's an eider namenas, so we don't believe her to the extent of allowing her to remarry without anything, because the whole reason that we believe a woman is isha daiko minseva, but not when it comes to take herself away from the Yavam. Rashi says it might be that she dislikes the Yavam and will use any possible excuse to get out of marrying this Yavam. So therefore, she may be lying and saying that she's not chayev in Yibum or Chalitza just in order to get out of having anything to do with this Yavam.
She has to do Chalitza and Yibum.
So that's the 1 second. So the Rambam, by the way, gives a different reason. The Rambam says, because it's one thing when it comes to Arayas, for her to say, for her to think to herself, I know I'm really an Ashes Ish, but I'm going to be married anyway. That's a pretty serious Isser. She's going to think many times. She's going to think pretty hard before doing that. And she's not likely to do that. But the Isser of Yavam al-Ashuk is, after all, only a lav. If she is lying, and in fact her son died first, and therefore she is Chayev Yibum, and instead she went and married somebody else, okay, so she's going to think to herself, I was only Oivan and Isser lav. Big deal. So therefore, so we don't accept what she's saying at face value, but nevertheless, for choshesh in the dvaraha, nevertheless, we are choshesh for what she says. We have to be concerned, maybe after all, she is telling the truth. So therefore, she can't do yibum, but chaletzis, for lemis yabemis. So therefore, she needs to do chalitza. She cannot do yibum, because to be honest, if she does chalitza, then we've covered all our bases. If in fact she's telling the truth, then she did require chalitza. Then she could, if she was telling the truth, she could have done yibum as well. But we don't know that for sure. If she wasn't telling the truth, then she doesn't need either chalitza or yibum. But giving chalitza won't harm anything, so therefore she can do that. Actually, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that there can be a problem with her doing chalitza if in fact she's not required to. Namely, that if the chalitza was unnecessary later on, people might think that she's also to marry a kohen when in fact she's not. So we're going to deal with on Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis early in the next parak. We're going to deal with when we say that in fact we do this chalitza to be on the safe side versus not. But anyway, right now we're not getting into that detail. The point is, the point is, says Abaye, if you look carefully at the words of the Mishnah, the expression is choshishin ledvareha, implying ledvareha hu dechoshishin. So the Mishnah is implying only to her own words that she's trying to change her own chazaka. So therefore, we're saying that we don't believe her. That we're saying, therefore, that to be on the safe side, she can't do yibum, only chalitza. Hola dibret sora in choshishin. But the implication, why did the Mishnah have to add the words l'dvareha? It could have just said choshishin, So Ludvareho implies we don't believe her words. It means that we're choshish for her words. Implying that if it was a matter of her tzara, then we wouldn't be concerned about anything at all. That would fit with Reb Tarfon's opinion in our Mishnah that we're not concerned at all of what the tzara says. So we're saying, as we said, that even the tzara says that he's dead. Nevertheless, the tzara who remained at home is still even allowed to eat truma. There's no chashash at all that maybe. That may be what the tzara who did go overseas is saying is true. So therefore, so that later Mishnah would fit better according to Reb Tarfon's opinion, and therefore that strengthens what we're saying that the halacha is like Reb Tarfon. Okay. Since we're mentioning though this concept that Rabbi Akiva is saying loizu aderech metziatu midei avera, where we said that Rabbi Akiva is saying that just in case, what if there's an avera being done? What if she ends up eating truma when it's also? So the Mishnah digresses to talk about some other cases where Rabbi Akiva also uses such an expression. So the Mishnah says, kiddush achas mechamish nashim. What if a man was mekadesh one of five women? The Enyadeh Ezu Kiddush, and he doesn't know which one he was Makadish. So there are different Rishonim talk about different possibilities you could have. For example, they all have the same name, or he was Makadish one of them without specifying, whatever. Kol Achas Emeres Oisi Kiddush, and each one is claiming that he was Makadish me. So Noisim get Kol Achas V'Achas. So he has to give a get to each one if he doesn't want to marry. Now, obviously, if he wants to marry them, Gizun Dehe, let him marry them before Cherim Deh Ben Gershim. But whichever ones he doesn't want to marry, he has to give a get in case he was Makadish them. Umaniach ksuba b'nehen umistalik divrei Reb Tarfon. And Reb Tarfon says, as far as the ksuba, he doesn't have to pay a ksuba individually to each one. All he does is he puts one amount of a ksuba, 200 zuz, let's say, in front of them, and he leaves. And in other words, they're going to have to start. We're going to put it in based in Adshi Yove Eliyahu until one of them can bring a solid evidence that she's the one who was actually in the Scottish, bring the Adim that they were in the Scottish in front of or whatever. Rishonim, by the way, discuss at some in some length and give different possible scenarios. Normally, there's no ksuba after kedushin. Ksuba usually only kicks in once they do nisuin. So what's the case over here where he's makadish one of these women, and we're already talking about what we do with the ksuba? So there's a number of possibilities. We're going to learn in Gemara Ksubas, we're going to learn that sometimes you can have, there were places where they had the minhag to write ksuba even after the Erusin. And so the Ramban says, for example, again, let's say, for example, all these five women have the same name. So now there's a ksuba that says that he's right, that says that after the Erusin, that he's obligated to give Leah 200 zuz, and all of them are named Leah. So then you could have a suffix. Different Rishonim talk about different other possible scenarios, how you could have a ksuba in this case, where we're talking only after kedushin. Whatever the case. That's divrei Reb Tarfon. Again, Rabbi Akiva ima inzu derech motzi mi de'avera. Rabbi Akiva says that doesn't get him out of the avera. The fact is, we know he owes a ksuba to one of them. We don't know which one. So, you can get ksuba, halachas v'achas. So Rabbi Akiva says he's going to have to give a get and a ksuba individually to each one. He really only owes a ksuba to one of them. Nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva is going to say the only way, the fact is that he should have owed a ksuba to whichever one he was makadish. So now he's going to, in order to get out of it, in order to completely escape punishment by Hashem, he's going to have to give a ksuba to each one.
Even though he never was married to all five.
Even though he's never married, but he was makadish.
They just get enriched, unjustified.
But it's not unjustified. Well, but ultimately, one of them, he was makadish. Well, we'll see. Another case, gozel echad mechamisha. What if somebody stole from one of five people? The eni adem is a gozel. He doesn't know which one he stole from. Kol echad ema osi gozel. Again, each one is claiming that I was the one who was the victim. Same thing. Maniach zela b'nei no mistalik dibre Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon says all he has to do is put down the stolen money or object or whatever in front of them, and he can leave. And they can then they have to go to Beis Din, and Beis Din will tell them we'll keep it in escrow until one of you can bring proof. Again, Rabbi Akiva ima inzu derech motzi mi de'avera. Rabbi Akiva says that won't completely get him out of the consequences of the avera. Ad shi shalom l'cholach avrachot, unless he pays individually each one, because again, he's definitely chayev to one of them, and we don't know which one. I think somebody's trying to get in by the door. One second. Thank you. Okay. So the Gemara says, now let's consider Kiddush Katoni Baal Katoni. So the Mishnah is talking about a case where he was Mekadesh, one of these five women, and Reb Tarfon is saying we allow him to get away with paying only one ksuba, implying that if it was Baal, but if he had actually had relations with one of them, where now we know there's three methods that you can do Kiddushin, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. So what if he did Bia with one of them as Kiddushin? Then it sounds like Reb Tarfon would not disagree. He would say, so Loi Katoni, the mission doesn't mention, implying that maybe even Reb Tarfon would require him to pay the five ksubas over there, because the fact is, he did actually use the expression, the Gina Oisa Kiddushin Bia. He shamed her by doing Kiddushin Bia. What there is we learned Udiyu in the Masechta that Kiddushin Bia are also Rabbanan. Mara says over there that Rab would give Makas Maudus to a person who was Makadish with Bia, because the priest is a sticky thing to do. Here Rashi is pointing out a different point that Gina said that he shamed her by doing that. So the Orach Lanim makes an interesting point. So Marashah asks, why is Rashi using that? Who cares whether Gina Oisa? The point is he was over on Takana de Rabbanan. So the Orach Lanim explains like this. If it was just a matter of being over on Takana de Rabbanan, sure, we're going to give Malchus for it, but to make him actually pay Dine Mominus, to make him pay an extra 800 zuz to the other four women, we wouldn't go so far. But here, we're on top of that, it was a gnai to her that he shamed her by doing Kedushe Bia, implying also, like he's, so to speak, too cheap to even bother with Kedushe Kesef. So then the Gemara is saying Reb Tarfon might penalize him and make him have to pay a ksuba to each one individually, even though, of course, he only did Kiddushin Bia with one of them. So at further, the Gemara says, Gozo Katoni, Lokach Loi Katoni. Similarly, in the second case of the Mishnah, it says where he stole. It doesn't talk about where he bought something. Now, you could also have a case where a person bought something from one of five people, and he doesn't remember which one it was. So the question is, Mani Masnissin, Loi Tanakama, Veloid of Shimon Alazar. Well, then who would our Mishnah like? It would be like within later Tanoim who disagree within what Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva says, it doesn't seem to fit according to either the Tanakama or Reb Shimon Elazar's understanding of Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva's machlokes. The Tanya, we learn in the Braisa, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, lo nechlechu Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva, al shekiddush achas mechamas nashim ve'en yedeh ez kiddush. Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva do not disagree where he was just mekadesh one of the five, meaning regular kiddush kesef. The Enyade is a Kiddush, and he doesn't know which one he was Makadish. Shemaniach Suba Benehin Mustalik, that then even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree, since he did not do any Isur, so all he has to do is put down one Suba between them, and he can leave, and they have to argue it out between themselves. Al-Manachaku, what is the case they're arguing about? Says Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Al-Shabal, only if he did Kiddushe Bia. Then Rabbi Tarfon Oma, Maniach Suba Benehin Mustalik, Rabbi Akiva Omachi Shalom Ocholach Zvachis. So we see that Reb Shimon Elazar holds that only when there was an Isur done, namely that he was Makadish Babia, and as Rashi says, that he shamed her by that Gina Oisa, then Rabbi Akiva is gonna penalize him, and Reb Tarfon won't penalize him even in that case. But if there was only Kiddushin, regular Kiddushin of Kesef and Shtar, even Rabbi Akiva is not gonna penalize him. Or a Mishnah said Kiddush Achas Mechomish Nashim. That doesn't fit according to Reb Shimon Elazar's understanding. And the Braisa continues, Loi nechlechu Reb Tarfon Reb Akiva al shel lokach mekach mechamish bnei adam ve'en yodeh me'ez mehem lokach. And Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva don't disagree where a person bought something from one of five people and he doesn't know which one it was. Shemaniach dmei mekach b'neinu mistalik. But then both Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva agree he can just put down the money between them and leave, and it's not his problem. They can argue between themselves which one actually gets the money. The machloikas is only if he stole from one of five people. So now Reb Tarfon says that he can still put down the money between them and leave. Reb Akiva and Reb Akiva says that he has to pay individually to each one. So now let's look at the ratio of that brisa. Since Reb Shimon Elazar is saying, so actually both halves, the first half of the brisa, Reb Shimon Elazar was saying that they're not arguing about Kiddush, and in the second half he says they're not arguing about Lokach. Mikal the Tanakama of a Pligi. That implies that the Tanakama would hold that they're arguing even when Kiddush only, and even when Lokach. So in other words, according to the Tanakama, Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva, the disagreement does not have to do with only if you did something which is Osir, such as Kiddushe Bia or such as stealing. The Tanakama would say against Reb Shimon Elazar that the Machloikas Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva is even where what he did was Mutter, for example, being Makadish without Bia or buying. And yet the Tanakhama is saying that in those cases, that even in those cases, Rabbi Akiva would be machmir, and make him pay each one individually. So Miklal the Tanakhama Sava Pligi. So now, so the implication is that the Tanakhama disagrees with Rav Shimon Elazar in both cases. So now we have to ask money. So now regarding our Mishnah, where at first it says Kiddush, where on the face of it, Kiddush means that he did something which is mutter, but then it continues with Gozal, which is something that is usur, then who does our Mishnah go like? E Tanakhama listed Kiddush for Lokach. If it went according to the Tanakhama of that Braisa, then our Mishnah should be using in the first half Kiddush and in the second half Lokach that he bought from one of five people, and he doesn't know which one. E Rav Shimon Elazar listed Bar of Gozal. And according to Rav Shimon Elazar, it should be using the expression, it should be using the expression that Baal, which is an Isser, and Gozal, which is an Isser. So what is it? Why is the Mishnah saying one case of Heter and one case that's Osir, neither the Tanakhama, nor of Shimon Gamliel, nor of Shimon Elazar, rather, holds that that the Machloikas of Rav Taufin and Rav Akiva would apply in both those cases? The answer is, lo them, Shimon Elazar. We could say that our Mishnah, after all, is appointed of Shimon Elazar, or my Kiddush Bebia. When it says Kiddush, in fact, it means that he was Makadish Babia, which is in fact an Isser. And as we said in the Braisa, that is Reb Shimon Elazar would agree that that's when Reb Akiva is Machmer on him and Reb Taufin is still making. So therefore, so the Gemara says, so why does it phrase it like that? Tona Kiddush Lohdiach HaKosha de Reb Akiva. So it says the word Kiddush, implying that it was a valid Kiddushin, but it was done in a way that causes Gnai for her, and in a way which is also the Rabbanon, lohidiach ha-koicha de Rav Akiva, that tells you how far Rav Akiva is going and being machmir on him, the afogab de isur de Rabbanon oved konis, even though what he did was only an isur de Rabbanon, because after all, kiddush biyah are certainly allowed min haTorah. Nevertheless, konis, he's still penalizing the guy and making him pay five ksubas, and tona gezel lohidiach ha-koicha de Rav Taifin. Then in the second part of the Mishnah, it mentions the case of where he stole, and that tells you how far Rav Taifin goes. Da'afagab de'isur da'raisa over, that even though what he did was an isur da'raisa, the stealing after all is also da'raisa, loy konis, nevertheless, Rav Taifin is not penalizing him and allows him to pay only one amount rather than five. So ultimately, what we're saying is, so the Mishnah is appointed of Shimon Elazar, and what the Mishnah is in fact talking about Kiddushe Be'ila, so therefore it completely fits with what Reb Shimon Elazar says in that Braisa. So the Mishnah just wants to highlight for us whether the Issu was Daraisa or Darabanon. Either way, Rabbi Akiva is going to be Machmer on him, and either way, Rabbi Taufin is going to be Meikon. But if in fact there was no Issur, then we would say that that even Rabbi Akiva is not going to be Machmer on him. So if he was only Mekadesh without Bia, then in fact he could get away with paying only one Ksuba, even according to Rabbi Akiva. And if he bought rather than stole, then again he could put down one amount of money, even according to Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Getting back now to the topic of our Perek about evidence that a woman's husband is dead and what results from that. Mishnah says, "Ha'isha shahocha hiu baila l'mdinas yam." If a woman went together with her husband overseas, uvna imahem, and they had a child with them, we remember now the chazaka is that when she's left, is that even if her husband dies, she's going to be potter from chalitza and yibum because they have a child. Ubas va'ama mes baili va'achakach mesbi. She comes back and says, "My husband died, and then my son died." Ne'menes, then we believe her because. Because after all, she went out with a chazaka that she was allowed to marry. So therefore, it's an example of a pesha also, a pesha hitter. The same this is not pesha also, a pesha hitter. This is she had to begin with a chazaka that she's not requiring yibum, and now also she's saying I don't require yibum, and therefore we're good. The fact that she's saying her husband is dead, we believe her, as we learned in the previous Mishnayos, because Isha Daiko Mitzvah, and the fact that she doesn't have the child with her, but she says the child died later, fine. To begin with, she had that chazaka that because she has a child, or because he has a child, rather, therefore she's potter. On the other hand, if she says mes bni v'achakas mes baili, but if she says my son died, and then my husband died, which would mean, therefore, she's saying on herself that I am chayiv yibum v'chalitza, einan emenes, and we don't trust her, v'choshish in l'dvareha, however, we do have to be concerned that maybe what she's saying is correct, v'chaletzis v'lemes yabemes, so she's going to need chalitza in order to be able to marry out, but she can't do yibum in case what she said is correct, and in fact, that she, in case, in case what she said is incorrect, rather, and the son was still alive when the husband died, and therefore the Yavam can't do yibum with her because it would be an Isser Erva. What about another case? If she says now, so all of this was talking about so far, where when they left, they already had a child. Now, what happens if she says nitam li ben b'mnesayam? What if when she and her husband left, they did not have any children? Now she says, I had a child in Medinas Hayam, which would make her potter. Then she said, my son died, and then my husband died. Then we would believe her, because again, she's back to the same chazaka as before. She had a chazaka before that she's chayev in Yibum, and now she's still saying she's chayev in Yibum, so she's believed even to do Yibum. But again, mes baili v'achakach mes b'ni, but if she says my husband died and then my son died, which again would make her, if true, then that would make her potter from chalitza and yibum. Again, einan emenes, then we don't believe her. But still, we do have to be concerned for what she's saying. Maybe after all, what she's saying is true, and therefore she can't do yibum with the yabam. But chalitza, so let me see abemes. So therefore, she's going to have to do chalitza and not yibum to be on the safe side. So yeah, in the first case, actually, yeah, Rashi says it is an example of a pesha also, a pesha hitter, because when she left, she had a chazaka that she would have been mutter to remarry once her husband is dead. Now she's still saying, I still have that same chazaka because my son was alive when my husband died. So therefore, it's a pesha also, a pesha hitter. The same peh that's saying that she would have been also is also saying she's mutter because she's saying that the child died after. But so therefore, in the first and the third cases of our Mishnah, she can even do Yibum, but in the second and fourth cases not, because she's changing her chazak. Another case, what if when she left, she didn't have a Yavam yet, she didn't have a brother-in-law, her husband didn't have any brothers yet, and she says, Nitan li bein b'mdine, she says, Nitan li Yavam b'mdine seyam. If she comes and tells us that I had a Yavam who was born in Medinas Yam. So in other words, she's saying my mother-in-law was also overseas with us and she had a son, which now is a brother of my husband. And since they were alive in the world at the same time, then therefore, if true, then she is Chayib and Chalitza or Yibam with that brother. And she says that my husband died and then my Yavam. Or Yavami Vachakach Baili, or she says, my Yavam died and then my husband died. Either way, Ne'emenes, either way, we believe her. Because again, this is an example of a Pesha also a Pesha hit. Because to begin with, when she left, we had no Chazaka that she would ever be Chayiv in Yibum. Because even if her husband dies childless, there's nobody to do Yibum with. Now she's saying there was a Yavam, but he died. So it doesn't matter whether she says he died first or second. Either way, she's back to the same, she's back to square one. So therefore, she's saying that when I left, I had it when I left, I wasn't chayev in Yibum or Chalitza. Now I'm also not. So therefore, it's a pesha also a pesha hitter. The same mouth that said I was chayev in Yibum because I had a brother-in-law, the same one is saying I'm mutter because he died. On the other hand, holcha hiv uvayla v'yivam elam dinas hayam, but if she and her husband and her yavam all went overseas, omna mes baili v'achach yivami, or yivami v'achach baili, eina ne'emes. But so now, if she says that my husband died and then my yavam, or my yavam and then my husband, where either way she's trying to say that she's mutter, then einu ne'emenes. Then we don't believe her to marry out. Because here's the rule: she'ena isha ne'emenes lema mes yavami shetinase. We do not believe a woman to say that my yavam died to allow her to remarry again, because Rashi had said before the reason is because she may hate the Yavam and is trying to use every possible excuse to get away from him. And according to the Rambam, because since Yavam al-Ashuk is only an Isur Drabanon, she may treat it lightly as opposed to the Isur of Eshes Ish. So we don't believe her to do that kind of thing. Also, by the way, we also don't believe a woman to say that her sister died, that now she should be able to marry her sister's husband, whereas we learned in the Masechta before, sisters are an erva to one another. So if a man's married to one sister, he's not allowed to marry the other as long as the first one's alive. But once the first one dies, he's allowed to marry the second one. But we don't believe a woman when she comes and says, my sister is dead and now I want to marry her husband. That we don't believe, because it's only when it comes to Igor, only the Chachamim were Mako on Edus Isha, because otherwise she's going to remain an Aguna. She may never be able to get remarried. Here, she doesn't have to marry her sister's husband. She can marry other people. In fact, Tosfos earlier in the Masechta points out that we would have thought that maybe we should believe her, because after all, she could say, you know, it's not that easy to find a shidduch. Maybe the only available shidduch for me is my sister's husband, and therefore we should believe her. And therefore, the Mishnah is saying that we don't. And also, we also don't believe a brother to say that my brother is dead, that he should do Yibum with his wife. Because again, there's no matter of Igun over there. He's not an Ogun. He could marry anybody else. We also don't allow him to give Eidos that his own wife is dead, that he should now be able to marry her sister. Because again, there's no Igun involved because he could always marry somebody else. So only the rule that we allow a woman to say my husband is dead is strictly as far as her remarrying, but not as far as Yibum and other such things. There you need the regular kind of evidence. And therefore, and we're saying also that if we know that she had a Yavam, then now we don't believe her to say that Yavam is dead. It's not a Pesha also a Pesha Heter, because we knew she had a Yavam before. So the Gemara asks, the Gemara is asking something which is an issue involving Gittin, which is not really directly relevant to our Masechta, but the proof, the answer is going to come from our Mishnah. So that's why the Gemara is bringing it over here. Bomine Rovam and Abnachman, Hamazaka Getla Ishtar Mokam Yavam Mahu. What happens if a man is being Mizaka, a get to his wife through a Shliach at now we're going to learn in Masechta Gittin in a year or so from now, Be'ez Hashem, that there are a couple of different kinds of shliach to a get. There's one called a shliach. There's one called a shliach halacha, where he delegates to the shliach to bring the get from point A to point B, but it still needs to reach the woman or her shliach directly. There's also a shliach kabbalah, where the shliach himself, as soon as he receives the get, it's tantamount to the woman herself receiving it, and therefore the divorce works. Now, normally a husband can't appoint a shliach kabbalah. But the question is, what about over here, the makam yavam? What about if there's a yavam involved over here? So the husband is childless. So he's thinking to himself that if I die now, my wife is going to be subject to chalitza or yavam. So he's sending her a get. He wants to make a shliach kabbalah. And this way she'll be potter. So the question is, so in the normal case where there's no yavam involved, then a get is considered a choiv for her, and we know ein chav in la'odim shalei b'fonim. You can't create a choiv for somebody without, not in their presence, only a schus. But the question is, and it may be a schus over here, kibin de sanyale, do we say that since the woman often hates her yavam, zechusula, then we could argue that to be able to get out of marrying him, to get out of a potential of yibum with him is a schus for her, v'zochin la'odim shalei b'fonim, and we know in halacha that you can create a schus for somebody even when they're not present. So maybe therefore the husband has the ability to create a shliach kabbalah and give the get to him and it takes effect. On the other hand, you might have sometimes she loves the yavam and would like to marry him. So maybe we should argue therefore that this is a choiv. And you can't create a choiv for a person when he's not present. So Amalei, sort of Nachman answers him on the basis of our Mishnah. Tanena, we learned in our Mishnah. What do we say in our Mishnah that when she says that I have a yavam, which we didn't know of before, and now she's saying my mother-in-law gave birth to a son in Medinas Yam, and we said that choshishin, we have to be concerned that what she's saying is true. Now, if we kept her by original chazaka, then we would say if we kept her on her original chazaka, then we should be allowing her to remarry. And we don't, and vice versa. When she says in the earlier part of the Mishnah that I had a son in Medinas Yam, and then my husband died, and then my son died, and we said also Choshishin, we say because there she might be lying because she hates the Yavam and wants to stay away from him. So we see therefore that it can go either way. She might love the Yavam and be lying in order to marry him. She might hate him and lie in order to avoid marrying him. So it comes to being mezaka the get as well. So what do we say in the Mishnah? In both cases, v'choshin l'dvarah, v'chalitza s'v'levis yabemis. In both cases, v'choshish, and she can only do chalitza, not yibum. So therefore, we see that it's not an absolute thing. It's not a blanket statement that she always hates the yavam and always loves him. It might go either way. Therefore, applying it to the matter of the get, you can't be sure whether she hates him or loves him. Therefore, it won't work because ein chav in la'odim shalei b'fonim. The Rashba points out, so why don't we just ask her whether she loves him or hates him. And the answer is, he says, because when we have something like this, Zochin or Chavin La'odim, Shalai B'fanav, you can't, asking her after the fact doesn't help us. We need to know ahead of time whether she agrees to it. And if she agrees to it, good, she'll appoint a Shliach Kabbalah and we're home free. but we can't ask her afterwards and go based on that. So the Gemara continues. With that said, actually, the Meiri makes an interesting point. He says, if the Yavam is a Meshumad, then we could say it's certainly Zochen La'odim Shalei B'fanav, that it helps her, that she doesn't have to go and do Yibum or Chalitza with a Meshumad, which is a very difficult thing to accomplish. So then the Meiri says that he would argue, he says he doesn't have other Chachamim backing him up, but if he did, he would paskin that at least in the case when the brother is a Meshumad, he would allow it. An apostate who converted to a different religion, Rahman al-Thaniya. What happens in a similar case where a man is mezaka a get to his wife where they've been quarreling? So we learned earlier in the Perek that there can be a case where the husband and wife don't get along. What if the husband wants to divorce his wife, and so he wants to create a shliach kabbalah in order to give the get to him, and then that way it'll take effect? Does that work? Do we say kiven de islak tata ba'adei schosula? Do we say, well, since they're fighting, then it is a schos for her to be out of such a marriage? Or maybe after all, she prefers staying married. She prefers the pleasure of the body. In other words, the companionship. In other words, that after all, she may not be getting along with the guy, but at least she's married. The Gemara says, Tashma. Let's bring a proof. The Amr Shlokish, a famous expression, they have several times in Shas. Tav lamesev tandu milamesev amru. A woman would rather be together with another body than to be living as a widow alone. So even though her husband is a no good nick, nevertheless, we assume that she would prefer to be with him, other things being equal, rather than get divorced. So therefore, if she herself wants to get divorced and accept and makes a shliach kabbalah, sure. But for the husband to appoint one for her, we can't necessarily say, because that could be a chayv. And the Gemara gives several other expressions in this regard, where they're expressing that a woman would rather be married than not. Abaya Omar, the Shumshumana Gavra, even if her husband is tiny like an ant, Kurse Bechauta Romula, nevertheless, she feels the importance. I'm a married woman, and therefore she puts her chair by near all the important women. Kursa means a chair, Bechauta, together with the Choras, with the free noble women of the area, Romulo, they place her. And with the very fact that she's a married woman itself gives her a certain dignity and a certain status in the community. So even if her husband is a tiny guy like an aunt, nevertheless, she still appreciates being married to him. Rapapa uses a different expression, Dinafza Gabra, even if her husband has a very low down job that he only combs wool, which is a very degrading job. Nevertheless, she'll call by the door of the house and sit there. In other words, she'll be proud that she's married, and then call in full view of everybody to her husband to say, because in other words, again, she likes the fact that she's married, even if her husband is a low down guy. Rav Ashi, I'm going to Kulsa Gavra. Rav Ashi says, even if her husband is Kulsa, which Rav Ashi says Shemetz Psul Mishpacha, it means like there's some kind of psul in the family. Tosfos rather has a different expression. Kulsa is Maloshin Kulsei Kruv, which means stalks of cabbage. So even if her husband, all he does for a living is sell stalks of cabbage, which is again a very low down, degrading kind of job, nevertheless, she's not even going to ask him for lentils, which is a cheap food for her pot. In other words, she's happy to be married for him, even if he's not really providing much for her. Just the fact that she's married is itself a milah for her. Now, in what sense? Tona, we learn in a b'risa, v'kulan mizanis v'tolus v'valehen, because all of them have this advantage, that even if their husband is a no-good-nick and is a low-class guy, and never, they have the advantage. Give us a minute, please, to finish learning, and then have your conversations. Okay, thank you. V'kulan mizanis v'tolus v'valehen, all of them, they have the ability to be mizane, and if they have children, they can attribute it to their husbands, but after all, so in that sense, even if the husband is a no good nick and a low class guy and they don't get along, etc., she still has, why are we saying tabla mate of tandu and all these other expressions, is because at least she has that advantage out of it. She knows that she can cover up her affairs in that way. So ultimately we're saying that to give her, that to be mezakeh a get for her is not a schus, but rather a choiv, because no matter what, she would always prefer to stay married. Because being married is better than the alternative. That was so good. Thanks, everyone.